pitches to Aiden Farrell and one. I mean, that ball moved 12 times around the perimeter. Giannis, middle of the floor, gets around. One defender lays it in. He's got 18 points. Fires to the rolling Aiden, who goes to the cup and scores. What a debut for Aiden. Giannis chased down the loose ball, puts it in, and one. Giannis owning the third quarter, and the Bucks have gone up 16.
For all we've talked about three-pointers and modern basketball, the 2021 NBA Finals are being decided down low, deep in the paint, by two skyscrapers, Giannis Antetokounmpo and DeAndre Ayton. One in Milwaukee is a frequently maligned superstar, and the other, in Phoenix, was deemed the wrong top pick in a loaded draft, but both are reaching new heights right before our eyes. Today, ahead of a crucial Game 4 with the Suns up 2-1, Zach Lowe takes us inside the building of two big men and where these finals go from here. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, July 14th. This is ESPN Daily. Zach Lowe, you are incredibly sweaty right now. Thank you for joining ESPN Daily.
Right off the exercise bike, I am disgusting and gross, and video of this will not be shown to the world, thank God.
Zach Lowe hosts the Lowe Post podcast, and he is dripping, as usual, with salty NBA insight. And you've been hustling as a reporter as well, Zach, because your story on DeAndre Ayton, it arrives at the perfect time for me, because I want to be perfectly frank with you here. I was completely unprepared for how important this guy has been to the NBA playoffs and now the NBA finals. Because as we'll get to, even though he ran into foul trouble in Game 3, his absence in that game as a result, it kind of underscored his importance even more. So just explain for the people here who've been struggling like me, how important is this guy to the Suns, and how stark has his evolution been as a player?
So on some podcasts, many moons and maybe one pandemic ago, I called DeAndre Ayton the most important swing player in the NBA for the next 4 or 5 years. Like, if he hits, it's interesting. If he plateaus, the Suns don't get all that interesting. And part of the reason he was so interesting is because he could do so many things on both ends of the floor. You almost didn't know which direction to push him. Like, on offense, should he rim run? Should he shoot threes? Should he pass from the elbow like Jokic? What if he becomes a jack of all trades, master of none kind of player? And he's gotten a ton of credit in the playoffs for sacrificing his post touches and his mid-range jumper and all that to just do the dirty work of screen and dive on offense for Chris Paul and Booker. But I wanted to write the flip side of the story, which is all that's cool. It doesn't get you two wins from the title if he doesn't make an even bigger leap on defense from his rookie year to his third year. I honestly don't recall a player who has improved more on defense in that span, particularly a big man. And as you know, you can have all the great perimeter defenders you want. If your last line of defense isn't good, you're not going anywhere. And that to me has been the most important change in his game.
Yeah, and I want to get to the craft of defense, which you reported so exhaustively in your piece. But before then, I want to just go back to that momentous, pivotal NBA draft in 2018, Zach. Because, obviously, DeAndre Ayton is the number one pick for the Phoenix Suns. But it's worth reminding everybody, as DeAndre Ayton, I think, has been reminded by everybody for years now, at number three goes Luka Doncic to the Dallas Mavericks. At number five goes Trae Young to the Atlanta Hawks. So why did the Phoenix Suns, presented with all this talent potentially in front of them, go with the big guy?
Well, there's been a lot of theories about that over the years, and their coach at the time, Igor Kokoschkov, was the Slovenian national team coach, knew Luka Doncic very well.
Right.
The theories stretched from Robert Sarver just fell in love with the local kid from University of Arizona to he's just really good, like size. And Ryan McDonough, in his time as GM, he drafted a lot of big guys, Marquise Chris, Dragan Bender, Alex Len. Like, clearly they had an affinity for size there. And I think it just shows you the Phoenix story is, a lot of it is, if you keep drafting at the top or near the top, the NBA is pretty forgiving. Like, a lot of those guys are going to be really good. You might not get the best one, but you got a really good one. And then if you hit one outside the top, like Booker at 13, I think you're going to be in business, even if you mess up a lot of other stuff.
So as he gets going in his rookie year, this is 2018-19 now, Zach. How does it go for him? Because one of the words that jumped off the page to me in your piece was the adjective starstruck.
Yeah, I didn't really know that about him. I was talking to Corliss Williamson, Big Nasty, who was an assistant coach on that team, and he remembers DeAndre almost being intimidated by some of the centers that he had watched on TV. And he brought up Steven Adams, and I was like, man, I know Steven Adams is like a big, strong dude who will elbow you in the chest, in the face, and do all sorts of nasty stuff to you, but I didn't really think, 9 points per game or whatever, Steven Adams was going to be the one to get DeAndre off his game. And he just said, Corliss just said, I think DeAndre was always used to being this big, huge guy dominating everyone with size. And he got to the NBA. He's like, this dude's a 7'1 block of muscle who's really mean. And I'm not used to that. So I didn't know that about DeAndre. It's interesting to hear that perspective.
And then defensively, Zach, how did the NBA strike DeAndre Ayton?
He made mistakes of timing and spatial understanding on defense that were so jarring in how obvious they were that they were really unusual in the NBA. You just don't see guys recover to their man rolling to the rim like 2 seconds early and completely abandon the guard who drives to the basket. But I remember saying at the time, those mistakes didn't bother me so much because he was trying. They showed somebody who had good intentions, a good heart, and he was 19, inexperienced. Like, they were the kind of mistakes you would expect that player thrust into a starting role on a bad team with really inexperienced guards that he was in tandem with. They were the kind of mistakes you'd expect him to make. With reps, I thought he would get better. I didn't think in the span of 2 years he would go from looking totally out of his depth to being a very clearly above average to very, very good anchor of a defense. That is an astonishing level of progress.
And at the time, Zach, to put an even finer point on this, while DeAndre Ayton is struggling, how would you characterize what is happening to Luka Doncic and Trae Young as professionals simultaneously?
Well, I mean, both of them are blowing up, and Luka almost immediately becomes an all-NBA level player, and then in his second year goes toe-to-toe in the first round of the playoffs with a team that a lot of us picked to win the championship, the Clippers, who are just loaded with guys tailor-made to defend him, and looks, is drawing comparisons to Larry Bird and LeBron James and Magic Johnson, and looks like not just a great player, a 15-time All-Star, future top 10 record-setting guy of all time. And Trae Young looks like really, really good. Not as good as Luka, but, 25 and 10 every night. Fulcrum of a really good offense. And DeAndre Ayton just kind of looks like pretty good NBA center. Like, that's not as exciting as those first two things at the time.
So what do the Suns do as the conversation around DeAndre Ayton is getting pretty cruel in comparison, thanks to those two guys? What do the Suns do to fix what is ailing him? How do they fill the holes that he obviously has in his game?
Well, first of all, you remember, we're not that far removed. Like, it was the beginning of last season, the pre-pandemic season, when there were a lot of Suns fans who were making the "we're better off starting Aaron Baines" argument. Oh. Because Aaron Baines was shooting really well from three, and he was spacing the floor for the guards, and he's a more sound positional defender, and there was this sort of impatience with him. What they did was nothing fancy. Number one, he got reps. He got reps. They changed their scheme a little bit to dial it back and make it a little easier for him, but he got reps. He grew to understand the rhythm of how the NBA pick and roll worked, what guys like to do, how to manipulate them. And the other thing is, they got better players. Like, Mikal Bridges became a really good defensive player, a good two-way player. Devin Booker gets better every year. They trade for Chris Paul. All of a sudden, when you were trying to defend the pick and roll with a rookie point guard or an experienced point guard who's not very good at it, now you've got Chris Paul, one of the greatest defensive point guards of all time, a guy who, for better or worse, is going to be talking to you the entire freaking game and probably in your nightmares all season long about pick and roll defense.
And what the Suns are saying to Ayton in his dreams and his nightmares as defending the pick and roll is concerned, what are the mantras they're trying to imbue in this kid?
So shout out Mark Bryant, one of those coaches who makes the NBA. A big man, journeyman in the league as a player, Oklahoma City assistant for a long time, kind of a big man whisperer. You don't really hear his name. You don't talk about him, but he's just doing the work every day with, from Kendrick Perkins to Serge Ibaka to DeAndre Ayton. And he has two rules that he repeated them to me on the phone like 30 times. So I can only imagine what DeAndre Ayton's life is. Number one is, don't let the big man get behind your head. So if the big man's rolling to the basket and you kind of see him out of your peripheral vision, and he's behind your head, he's not parallel to your head anymore, you're in trouble. The lob is coming, or someone's got to help you. But number two is, and this is the one he repeated over and over again, the ball scores. The ball scores, which means you cannot abandon that ball handler early, because if you do, he's the most dangerous player on the floor. He's got the ball. So he would just repeat to DeAndre. And he told me, you know, DeAndre has reached a point where if he slips up and he comes to the bench, I can just sit him down and say, don't let the big get behind your head. The ball scores. And he comes right back to me. He's right back in the game.
Yeah, I imagine almost this is like Jedi big man training, Zach, because you start as a Padawan, you have no idea how to do any of the stuff, you have these phrases that get repeated and drilled into your brain, and then you emerge on the other end as something of a master. In DeAndre Ayton's case, how would you describe where he is right now in terms of his ability to live in between those two phrases and those two reminders?
He's gotten really good, and he's reached it, maybe not the final stage, but the beginnings of the final stage of big man pick and roll defense, which is I not only know now how to survive in this space, how to guard these two guys at once without letting either of them get free. And that's just footwork and having your arms out and being big. But now I'm kind of getting confident. Now I think I might be able to manipulate one of those guys. I might be able to trick them. So if Jrue Holiday is coming at me and Giannis is rolling, I'm in between them. I might be so confident in my guard to recover or my own ability to recover. Maybe I can take a jab step at Jrue Holiday and make him think I'm coming. And then he throws the lob. But by the time that lob's in the air, I've tricked him. I'm going to intercept it or tip it away.
Now Holiday using a Giannis screen right of the circle into the high post. Now flips it toward the rim for Giannis, but deflected away by Ayton.
Excellent defense by Ayton.
You're starting to see that kind of manipulation from him, which at age 22, he's not 23 yet, that's pretty damned impressive.
So where does Chris Paul fit into all of this, Zach? Because I know in the bubble last season, before they ever got CP3, they went on that run, right? 8-game winning streak, almost got in the playoffs, didn't quite get there. But clearly, like, people like Chris Paul were watching and observing what was being built out in Phoenix. When Chris arrives, what impact does he have immediately on this player?
Well, it's, you know, there's been sort of all these Twitter memes about overcrediting Chris Paul. Like, you have to expect
him to
be. And
I want to be careful about this, Zach. I want to be careful to not give credit to Chris Paul for the work DeAndre Ayton has been doing. But the question remains.
You almost expect, like, him to be credited for Pete Alonso winning the home run derby and, like, the creation of the Pfizer vaccine or something. But
that's right.
But I can only take what the players say at face value. I mean, Chris Paul's ego doesn't need this kind of stroking. DeAndre Ayton has no incentive to come out and say, oh, this guy meant a lot to me. And he says it anyway. And what he said was, Chris Paul would take me aside, say, hey, look, I've played against Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic 40 games. I've played against, you know, Dame Lillard and Yusuf Nurkic 25 games. Here's what they like to do. Here's how Nurkic likes to roll. Here's how they flip the screen. And by the way, I'll be there for you. I'm not going to get hit by a screen. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to get around the pick. We're going to do this together. And also, DA told me, CP just got on my ass. Like, he's not going to let up. If you have a little bit of an angle mistake, a little footwork mistake, like, he's going to let you hear about it. And he wanted that. He needed it. He craved it. And he likes playing with Chris.
I gotta say, he's the best thing that happened to my career. You know, just teaching me so many things. And, you know, the most important thing he told me was angles. So just finding how to get people open, you know, how to slip out of screens, how to, you know, get him to his spots and stuff like that, just to put pressure on certain teams, defense, stuff like that. You know, he's been a big deal.
It occurs to me, though, that a guy who comes in as the number one overall pick, a lot of guys don't like the idea that what their team wants them to do is become more narrow and almost more specialized to suit their needs as opposed to his possible potential, Zach. But what we've seen from him defensively, as you describe, but also offensively, I mean, the stat that currently is, I think, still accurate, which is that no one has had a more accurate postseason in NBA history than DeAndre Ayton. What does that speak to?
Look, I'm sure DeAndre Ayton envisioned his career shooting more jump shots, fadeaways from the post, like spins on the baseline for dunks. And he'll get chances to do that in the future. On this team, with two pick and roll ball handlers who are just as good as it gets and shooters around him at all times, they just need him to screen and roll and be big and get offensive rebounds and beat up switches, all of which he's done. I mean, I would assume there's part of him that's like, I can do more than this. I know I can do more than this. But you get this feedback loop that happens in the playoffs where it's like, oh, everyone's noticing my contributions that I thought would go unnoticed, because no one really cares if we win or lose a game in January, but everyone cares if we win or lose game three of the series. Mm. All these contributions are getting noticed. We're winning. When we win, everyone gets credit. Everybody gets lifted up. Everybody's on the front page of ESPN and on SportsCenter, all that. I'm going to lean into these things even more, and I'm going to keep leaning into them even in 2 and 3 years when Chris Paul is older or maybe not here and I need to do more stuff on offense. Like, I've learned that this part of my game is appreciated, and you don't get that sort of feedback loop in the regular season. You only get it in the playoffs when you win.
No, you don't care about it in the regular season. You don't care about it really oftentimes until like an NBA Finals, Zach, where I find myself watching him in game one and game two being absolutely indispensable to the Phoenix Suns. But then game three comes along, and in this other way, that importance is almost more explicitly reinforced. What happens there?
Yeah, he gets in foul trouble. And at first, they take him off Giannis and put Jay Crowder on Giannis, and Giannis looks a little more comfortable in that matchup than he does with a seven-footer on him. And then he gets in so much foul trouble that he only ends up playing 24 minutes. And you just feel his lack of size. Like, Giannis is going to the rim, and all of a sudden, it's just an extra foot of limbs that he doesn't have to worry about anymore, either on him or coming from the weak side. And you also begin to feel the lack of depth with Dario Saric out for the season. Torrey Craig tweaked his knee. You know, the Suns are running out of guys. There is no other Ayton on their team. Like, if Chris Paul gets into foul trouble, you can hand some of the offense to Booker and not lose that much. If Mikal Bridges gets into foul trouble, you've got all these wings. You have no other Ayton, and you felt how indispensable he was.
All right, Zach, so after the break, at this inflection point in the NBA Finals, I want to turn to the primary beneficiary of DeAndre Ayton's foul trouble in Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is also, incidentally, reaching completely new heights.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Zach, it's strange that we've gotten only to Giannis in the second segment of this podcast, but I do want to give him full credit here. I mean, 40-plus point double-doubles in Game 2, in Game 3, shooting over 60% from the floor. He is seemingly scratching the ceiling of a cathedral that is a lot bigger than I realized, as that potential metaphor goes. What are you seeing out of this guy?
It's very much related to Ayton because, you know, Giannis won two MVPs, being point Giannis, being the guy who brings the ball up the floor, runs pick and roll, runs ISO. I'm responsible for spraying the ball out to my shooters every possession I'm in the game. And the Bucks hit a ceiling, hit a wall playing that way because he's not a good enough shooter and the shooting around him is good but not great. And that difference matters when you get to the best teams. And so he leaned into, I don't have to change the kind of player I am. I can be multiple players within the same game. I can still do all that cool stuff with the ball.
Nice feed inside. Portis with the flush. And Antetokounmpo, four assists here in the opening quarter.
The stuff that MVPs do, the stuff that LeBron does and KD does, and the guys that I think I'm like. But I can also do this stuff that Tyson Chandler does in his prime, or that Shaq does, or that Anthony Davis does, which is set screens for the best shooters on my team, roll hard to the basket in open space, and suddenly the worst shooter on the team isn't on the perimeter. He's going to the rim.
Lopez, way short on the three. Tucker grabs it. Back to Antetokounmpo, and the Bucks regain the lead.
And bending the entire defense in toward him and opening up stuff for other people, And I think, you know, that's not sexy. It's sexy when you catch a lob. You only do that once out of every 10 times. You know, it's sexy when you get an and one around the rim in traffic. You do that a few times, but it's not sexy. And I think he's realized I can do that. It helps my team. And I can still do plenty of the other stuff that makes highlights, like get out in transition, destroy guys on the block if I have the right matchup. He's just found the right balance in his game. And he deserves a ton of credit for that. That was a slow, gradual reinvention of himself as a player that is getting close to kind of what he should be and what he will be at his apex in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm struck by how sort of back to basics the future of big man play in these finals has been, because as you say, Giannis is doing the stuff that, like, I think Shaquille O'Neal is just perpetually yelling about on Inside the NBA, Zach, just like attack the rim, be big, use your size, use your physical strength, all of that. When you look at how the Bucks have strategized around this series, what flipped? Why did that change actually occur? Why are they playing so differently in this way?
I don't think it's this series. I mean, if you look at the 10 games in which Giannis has set the most ball screens in any game, 9 of them are in these playoffs, 9 of the top 10 games. And the other one was a Brooklyn game in the regular season. And I just think they realized against the very best teams, we have to have variety. It is somewhat about what Giannis can and can't do. And you talked about what Giannis should do and how Giannis should direct his own game. It's also how Giannis should use and uplift his teammates. Like Chris Middleton can do X, Y, and Z with the ball. Jrue Holiday can do X, Y, and Z with the ball. How can I help them do that better? Oh, it's by setting screens or cutting or whatever it is. And that's just part of winning at the highest level. Even LeBron, when he teamed with Dwayne Wade, had to become a better cutter, had to become a better post player. Like you see it with all these guys.
And so it's worth noting also, Giannis, over these last two games, he has shot 23 times from the restricted area, Zach. He has made 22 of them. Woo. And so just the cartoonish sort of dominance of a guy who, by the way, I also feel bad for not mentioning it until this point, although I think NBA fans know this. The dude thought he was out for the season.
And Giannis is grabbing toward his left knee area.
Oh, my. And he is not moving. And looks like in severe pain.
Like, just the injury, Zach, how staggered are you by just physically what we're seeing out of Giannis?
My reaction, and I'm sure the reaction from a lot of people around and in the league, was enough with the season. Let's just get done. Like, I can't do this anymore. It's too many guys. It's too many marquee players. Too many guys who are now missing significant chunks of next year. Just let's fold it up, award someone the championship, and move on. And then you started hearing the news that we reported that there was no major structural damage. Then you started hearing rumblings about, well, game one of the finals, he might go. And then he scores 20 in game one with a pretty low usage rate. And you're like, okay, maybe this is just, you know, they're going to get 85% of Giannis. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be able to put his imprint on the game as much as the Bucks need. And then it's like, oh, he didn't just put his imprint on the game. He like took the whole game over and ate it for dinner or something. I mean, the guy has been ridiculous in the last two games.
And so, because a lot of the flourishing that we've described in game three, at least, came with DeAndre Ayton out, how do you think that sort of, you know, battle between, there's a Godzilla versus King Kong dynamic, right? We have two big men at the peak of their powers. What do you think happens from here within this specific matchup?
I think both teams have pretty much reached a strategic equilibrium, and now it's, we know what you're going to do. You know what we're going to do. Let's see who does it better. I do think the Suns are going to come out in game four with some different looks for Giannis. I'm not sure what those will be. Maybe they'll start Crowder on him to try to keep Ayton out of foul trouble. I would probably still start Ayton on him and hope I get through the first 5 minutes without a foul and go from there. Maybe they'll show him more help. Maybe they'll send help from unpredictable directions. But I do think they will adjust their coverages on him because he's just getting to the basket too easily.
You mentioned earlier how the Suns had this opportunity to look at someone like Ayton and think, okay, do we want to make this guy Jokic? Do we want to make him something like what Giannis had been trying to be before this particular postseason, the futuristic point center who can do everything? So the fact that we're getting this matchup, we have this equilibrium, as you say, what does that say about the big man in 2021 and in years to come in the NBA?
I think it just says you have to be malleable to the talent on your team. You know, when you have Devin Booker and Chris Paul, you can just play this way and you'll get your touches here or there when one of them's off the floor, you got a good matchup or whatever. But in the future, the some Suns team in 5 years is going to need DeAndre Ayton to average 24 a game, 22 a game, face up, take guys off the dribble, and he'll get better at that and he'll get more reps at that. Like Rudy Gobert wouldn't be as big a star without Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley and Joe Ingles and all this overflowing level of ball handling to just make his job what it is, which is do the same thing more or less every time down the floor. And then you have the stretch bigs, the five out bigs, the Karl Townses of the world, and they're kind of an offense unto themselves. And
yep.
Ayton may never be that kind of that dynamic from outside, but he'll lean into that direction.
So what you're saying to Phoenix Suns fans is that at the very least, feel pretty good that you drafted DeAndre Ayton, even though you didn't get the potentially 15-time All-Star in Luka Doncic, and also like the heartthrob of the playoffs at a certain point in Trae Young.
How could you not feel good? You've never won a championship before. You're in the finals. Did you see the guy with the bandana during Giannis's free throws who looked like he was waiting for the rapture to take him up to heaven? I mean, that's how you should feel. That's how Suns fans should feel. Win or lose this series, that's how you should feel.
Zach Lowe, as you sit here in front of me on Zoom, bathed in light, sweat pouring down your brow, it looks like you two are ready for the rapture. So I will just end this by saying thank you for joining us again.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, coming up, I want to go from Godzilla versus King Kong to man versus Donkey Kong.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. 40 years ago this month, Donkey Kong showed up for the first time in arcades around our planet. And look, if you're already yelling at your phone saying, "Hey Pablo, Donkey Kong is not a sport, it is just a video game," well, you clearly don't know about the savage world of competitive Kong. You clearly don't know that one of our producers attended a classic video game tournament in New Hampshire, where he saw one guy spit, and I quote, "like a full-on loogie," end quote, in another player's face. And you clearly don't know the ballad of Steve Wiebe, the legendary king of Kong. You see, Wiebe had picked up the game during his college years, dominating his friends, as one does, by dodging barrels to save a damsel in distress from a furious 8-bit gorilla. Wiebe put years of his life into the game, even buying his own machine to try and master it like an instrument. But one day in 1991, Wiebe hit a wall. A wall named Level 22, which is known among true Kong heads as the infamous kill screen, a level deemed impossible to surpass. So, Wiebe pulled the plug. The champ sold his machine, leaving his record at 960,000 points, and he said to himself, I am sure, what Kanye West would later say to Kobe Bryant: "How many records can my records break?" But then Wiebe learned something that reignited his Mario mentality. As beautifully chronicled in the documentary, The King of Kong, he learned that someone else, a player named Billy Mitchell, was being officially recognized as Donkey Kong's one and only world record holder. And so Wiebe proceeded to spend years training. He spent years watching the throne, plotting revenge, and in 2004, he did the impossible. He killed the kill screen. He hit 7 digits. And then got accused of using an illicit circuit board, which stripped him of his record as Donkey Kong's first and only points millionaire. Which is why the very next year, in 2005, the guy came back again, taking his talents to the most hallowed arcade in Donkey Kong lore, a place called Fun Spot in New Hampshire, which happens to be the very same place where our producer would watch that guy hawk a loogie at that other guy years later. And Weeby put up a clean 985,000 points in 2.5 hours in front of a live crowd. And that's great. That's impressive. But Billy Mitchell submitted a videotape that had him scoring a million points, stealing Weeby's thunder immediately, and winning a record which would stand until 2018, when Mitchell, of course, got accused of using illicit hardware himself to doctor the videotape. Mitchell naturally denied this, but Weeby was hailed as the king. This whole thing, as I think you can tell, remains a gloriously tangled mess of disputed records and cheating allegations and extremely resentful egos. In other words, it's sports. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.